Hey Manuel.
Hey, Kira.
How are you? Happy New Year.
Thank you. I'm okay. Today's been kind of challenging day, but I'm doing okay.
Oh
Yeah.
no. You sound a little down.
Yeah, well, those days happen. So
Well, I hope it gets better.
I appreciate that.
Did you do any fun over the holidays?
No, I just stayed local.
Oh,
Just
okay.
rested, yeah.
Well, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
I feel like taking a break is nice.
Yeah, exactly.
Hi, Matt.
Hello, Maya. Oh, I'm off mute. Hello.
Hi. How are you?
I'm okay.
Oh no!
It's
Oh my gosh! Is it a
been
down
hectic.
day for everyone?
It's been hectic.
Yeah. Is this everyone's first week back, or it was last week?
I've been back the whole time. Let's see.
Yeah, I didn't take time off. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Oh
Just the days of the holidays,
no.
pretty
Yeah,
much.
everything is ramped up, sounds like.
Yeah.
Hi, Mark. Hi, everyone.
Hello. Hello. Manuel, you have a fresh new haircut, or at least a haircut since I last saw you. I love it.
My hair is actually up.
Oh, that's where it's at.
Yeah, thank you though. Thank you for noticing, Mark.
Maria.
Hi, how are you? Happy New Year.
Maria,
Happy
Happy New Year,
New
everyone.
Year. Savannah, will you be able to share your presentation on your side?
Yeah, it looks like I can, so I can absolutely do that.
Excellent.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Now that David's no longer here, I'm like, do we have quorum? I don't know. Like, does it seem like we have everyone that might be
That's a good
attending? I know
question.
Chuck is not going to be attending. He emailed us and let us know.
Give
He
me
has
one
excused.
second. We have there are seven. We do have quorum.
Awesome. Well, I'll be leading today, so I'm happy to start whenever.
I think
Hey,
you can go
Nala.
ahead.
Okay, great. Hi, everyone. Manuel Vasquez here at the Mayor's Office of Housing. I am, we'll just do roll call. So I am Council Affairs Co-Chair, Matt Geltmaker,
Matt Geltmaker, Council Member.
Mark Molnar,
Mark Moore, Council Staff.
Kira,
Kara, Council Staff.
Na.
And Nali, Council Member.
Maria.
Maria Lacayo, SFDPH, HIV Health Services.
Great. And Andy Shear is just joining, Thomas Noble as well. If y'all could just introduce yourselves.
Upstairs. Okay. I feel like everybody's here at least at the origin is where.
So Andy and Thomas, if y'all could announce yourselves. We're just doing roll call.
I'm Andy Shear. I'm with HIV Health Services.
Hey, I'm Thomas Noble, they, them pronouns, Community Health Equity and Promotion Branch. I'm going to be in two meetings, so just I'll be off camera, kind of. Cool.
All
Good
right,
seeing
and
folks. Happy New
Irma
Year.
did let us know that she would be joining just late.
Okay, great. And then I want to welcome our guest, Savannah O'Neill of Vincente Consulting. Hi, Savannah.
Hi, everyone. Nice to see you all.
Great. So why don't we just start by reviewing the last minutes from November 14th?
Oh, agenda first, I think.
Okay. Our agenda, yeah, we can pull up that first. I always get a little confused. Okay, so here's the agenda for today. If everyone's okay with that, we will approve by consensus. Anyone against? Okay, it's approved. Great. Thank you. Now we will pull up our minutes from November 14th. Okay. If
It
everyone's
says,
okay.
oop, this is from a while ago.
I know it feels like a while, but time also flew by. already in the new year. So if everyone's okay with this, we will approve by consensus. Okay, great. And now I'm going to turn it to announcements. Does anybody have any announcements they wanted to make in the brand new year? No? No events or anything? Okay.
I do have one announcement slash reminder. I just sent out a notice a little while ago about everyone's 700 forms. So if you received that, I haven't received it yet. I did get Nas just recently. So now you're all good. But just remember to have your 700 form done.
Thank you. And yeah, I got it an email just because of the official pointing. My deadline's actually the 15th of this month, so I have to submit that. Thank you for that reminder.
Great. You should have mine. I submitted it, the electronic thing too.
Yes. Also, we did talk with our mayor's office rep, and so he did slew and officiate a whole slew of people in. So there should be two different ones, Manuel. So there should be. This is for a couple of people too, so maybe I should send a different email, but there should be two different ones that you'll be filling out.
Okay, thank you. And I know because it's a city employee, I also have another one to fill out in the spring, so yay. Okay, any other announcements? No? Okay, public comment. Does anyone in public comment want to share anything? Any questions? No? Okay. Then we'll move on to co-chair election. This is a vote. All right. Yeah.
So our current co-chairs are Manuel and Chuck. Chuck has said that he would not like to be reelected, so please do not nominate and elect him. Manuel has not said that, so may certainly continue on if reelected. So we're looking for nominations for two co-chairs. I would like to underline, because most council members are usually quite shy about taking leadership positions like co-chair. So I want to definitely underline how low impact this work is. I'm sure Manuel can attest to that. It's basically reviewing and approving the draft agendas, alternating or coming up with some kind of system in which there is representation at steering, and of course, facilitating meetings, usually, you know, one then the other. So with that said, the floor is certainly open for nominations, including any self-nominations. I know there's not a whole lot of folks to choose from here, but there are four council members present.
I don't like to self-nominate. I would like to nominate Na Lee.
Thank you. At this time, I'm going to decline. I have some other responsibilities with my position, and so I just want to focus on those changes for now. Understood. Also, I have a question. Are steering committees in person?
No, they are not.
Oh, they're online. Okay.
No. Does that change your no to a yes?
I want to see who else is interested first.
Okay. Would anyone like to nominate Manuel as a renewal?
Sure.
Yes.
I'll take Matt as a nomination and Na as a second. Manuel, do you accept that nomination?
Yes, thank you both, Matt and Na. I accept.
All right, so we were looking for one more. Again, very low impact position.
Maria.
Maria is not a council member.
Oh, I thought she was.
No. Per the new person. No, yeah, per she is our partner.
I thought she had gotten put on the council.
No, actually, HHS was at first removed from the council per guidance, and then per guidance update put back on the council as non-voting member. So Bill Bloom is currently a non-voting member of the council. Certainly if Bill, I think Bill has a long game plan for Maria to perhaps eventually come on the council, but currently Maria is our partner, not a council member.
Are the options just me or Matt?
I was going to say, maybe it's helpful for us to go over who is eligible, because there are some people that are not on this call, right? So, Mark, do you mind reminding us?
And I'll probably need some help from Carrie here, but my understanding is that Irma is certainly eligible. She is a council co-chair, so she does hold the position. But, you know, Richard has also held that same kind of dual role, so certainly could be. And then Thomas, of course, is also a co-chair and could hold a dual role if he accepted. And that would leave Matt and Na. And am I missing anyone, Kira, as far as who's on this committee?
I also have TJ on this committee.
And there's TJ as well.
So I'm just extremely reluctant for a couple reasons. One, this is my final year. And I really...
What a way to go out, though. Gosh.
No. And I was co-chair for many years of the previous name of this committee, which I'm forgetting what that name was. But I was co-chair for quite a few years for that. So that's where I'm just...
You were co-chair membership as well, if I recall.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. You co-chaired all
of them. I can't even remember. My memory would be so poor.
Well, on that note, I would like to nominate Thomas Noble.
Is there a second to that nomination?
I'll second that nomination.
Thomas, do you accept this nomination? Thomas is in that other meeting currently.
Well, okay.
There he is. There they are.
I will take the lead, Thomas.
Thomas is declining, or is that were you shaking your head?
Sorry, I was declining. Fashion? Sorry, thank you. I don't know if I could actually do that. That would probably kill me.
Sorry, I have a question. Can you remind me when steering committees are and if it will indeed remain online? Because that's kind of my hesitancy, as I'm not local, yeah, sure. So I drive in every time.
It's the third Thursday of the month at 3:00. And Manuel, if you both are elected, would be able to alternate, so you wouldn't actually have to go every month. And yes, that is determined to be a virtual meeting, unless, I guess, in case of emergencies where the steering would have to weigh in on a substantive matter. But again, like, that's something that you could arrange with Manuel. Like, representation does not require both of you to attend. Forum at steering is a special kind of situation where we just need representation from one person per committee. And so there's a lot of flexibility there, Na.
Well, and to sweeten the pot again, I'm happy to take the lead. I've been really flexible with Chuck. Pretty much me. I'm happy to just lead a lot of the meetings if you're really limited. So, yeah.
Okay.
What do you think, Na?
I'll accept the original nomination from Manuel if, I guess, someone seconds it.
Yeah. Can I get a second from Matt or Thomas?
Sure, second.
All right.
Congratulations, Na.
Oh, well, we don't know yet. Any opposed to the election of Na and Manuel as...
Other council- than Na and Manuel, they can't oppose it.
Well, seeing no opposition... Congratulations to both of you for being the co-chairs elected for this committee.
Now you'll have to thank Cicely.
Thank y'all.
Yeah, she told me this was going to be a limited number of hours, and now I'm a co-chair.
Well.
Well, I'm grateful. Thank you, everyone, for your continued support. Moving just along, next item is committee mission review.
Sure. So this is something that Kira has suggested. I think it's a great idea to do a very brief update about what the purpose of each committee is within each committee. So I'm going to share screen with the agenda that you just saw and point out a particular part so that I can go over it, as well as go over an additional component of council affairs that's not actually listed in our mission. One moment. Okay, can you all see that? You should be able to see the mission statement. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So the mission statement reads, to facilitate education of the council on mandated legislative and important provider issues in order to inform HIV prevention strategies, effective annual service prioritization, and resource allocation. So in a nutshell, that means reviewing presentations, making sure that those presentations have information that is understandable to council members, that is relevant to the council's concerns, and that sometimes is, I guess, provided within a particular time frame. You know, we usually have 30 to 45 minutes, so that does mean some editing sometimes happens as well. Beyond that, this committee has purview over what is sort of dually named our work plan / presentation calendar. We'll actually be looking at this after the presentation review today, which means that this committee has charge of basically building the agenda of for the year. You know, the goal of these presentations and of agenda building is all connected to the overall goal of the council, which is to prioritize services and to allocate resources, namely Ryan White Part A. So everything that this committee does, all the presentations that are scheduled are all supposed to be in service to that goal. In addition to that, the goal is an expansive one. So it's not just the prioritization allocation of Ryan White. We're also supposed to be aware of everything else that's going on in the system of care that potentially impacts our Ryan White consumers of services. So that means even though we're not putting, say, a lot of money towards a particular housing programs, we do need to know about that. And so that might mean we get certain presentations on other parts of the system of care that are not Ryan White funded. That could include other places like mental health, senior care, substance use, et cetera. So that's really the main thrust of what this committee performs. Any questions on that? Then additionally, because this is in many ways a parallel to the community engagement in that this committee focuses on the services provided by service providers and by government entities, in parallel with the community engagement, really looking at what's going on with the consumer experience, this committee has also been with its collaborating partner in looking at things like standards of care and best practices. I know Maria has been working on that, and that's something that the committee can also do if it sees fit, of course, always in collaboration with HIV Health Services. So that's in some ways a secondary part of this committee's mission. Any questions on that? All right, any questions at all about the mission of this committee? All right, thanks all.
Thanks, Mark. Okay, and the next item on our agenda is for our guest. We're excited to see this. Long-acting injectables presentation with Savannah O'Neill, where we'll be previewing the presentation from Vicente Consulting. I will hand it over to you, Savannah.
Great. Thank you all. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. And okay, it looks like you can see my first slide there.
Yes.
Great. Thanks for having me. So and for being here. So as Manuel said, today we're going to be going over the highlights of a landscape analysis in which we explored sort of current and further future implementation of long-acting injectable ART in PrEP in San Francisco and work closely with Andy and Thomas. And before I get into actually the presentation about what we learned, just briefly, I am Savannah O'Neill. I'm a senior consultant with Vicente Consulting based in Oakland, California. And I, have worked in sort of harm reduction services and HIV services as a social worker, and then doing capacity building work for the last 15 years before joining Vicente. So excited to be able to learn more about the state of LAI in San Francisco and bring this all to you. So our plan for today is to give you an overview of what we learned about LAI, ART, and LAI PrEP, and how we sort of got that information and learnings. And we're going to cover it in 5 main topics. So background information and sort of how did we approach this work? What were our key findings of what did providers say were the facilitators and barriers to LAI implementation in San Francisco? Some examples of program models, some data about LAI uptake and client clinical level data, and then future considerations of what this work could look like in San Francisco. So let's get started with some background on how we approached a landscape analysis. So as I'm sure all of you know, long-acting injectable ART and PrEP are promising new tools for HIV prevention and treatment. Their sort of long-acting properties and different mechanism of working has the potential to really better engage patients who've struggled with daily adherence to oral ART and PrEP, especially people experiencing homelessness, people who use drugs, communities of color, and trans women. And when these interventions were FDA approved in 2021, San Francisco really showed great leadership by rolling out these new interventions and exploring how to engage people highly impacted by HIV. And therefore, the kind of perspective of San Francisco providers is really invaluable in optimizing, looking at the impact of these interventions. So that's really what we focused on. And so we worked with, as I said, San Francisco Department of Public Health, HIV Health Services, to conduct a landscape analysis. And that was really primarily to get the insights of SF providers implementing these interventions on the ground, and really to focus on the key facilitators and barriers to imagine what this could look like. And really our approach to the landscape analysis was primarily qualitative. So as I said, really talking to providers to really hone in on their experiences and perspectives on what's been successful, what's been challenging, and what do they hope for the future of LAI in San Francisco. So to do that, we conducted 21 interviews with 12 different sites who are doing some form of long-acting injectable, either ART or PrEP. And we interviewed a range of people. So that was clinicians, pharmacists, nurses, outreach workers, HIV prevention specialists, among other kinds of staff who are doing this work. And we didn't only do qualitative work. We additionally collected some quantitative data about LAI patient demographics and from a subset of 6 implementation sites. And I'll repeat this throughout, but it's a non-representative sample. We attempted to get more data and couldn't specifically. We're missing data from large programs like Ward 86, Kaiser, and UCSF. So it really would be worthwhile to do a broader analysis if we're really wanting to learn about client level data. But we did do that, and we also reviewed existing literature and materials on sort of LAI, PrEP, and ART, and that helped contextualize the findings that we heard in the interviews. And if you're curious, here are the 12 implementation sites that participated in this project. And again, so they also don't represent all the people doing LAI in San Francisco, right? But these are the 12 sites that we interviewed people at, and the majority offered both long-acting injectable PrEP as well as ART, but not all of them. And the ones with the asterisks show who we did get client-level data for. So when you see that data later in the presentation, it's coming from those clinics. And feel free to ask questions as we go, but I'll also have time at the end. Okay, so what did we actually learn when we talked to providers? So there's sort of 4 key themes that I'll walk through that we heard from people. And one was sort of the acceptability of long-acting injectable among providers and patients. Then there's sort of the conversation and thinking about how equity plays out with LAI, how the resource intensiveness of these kinds of projects, as well as scalability and sustainability of LAI. So with respect to acceptability first, both patients and providers generally found LAI to be acceptable. Providers really shared that patients perceived LAI alternatives to be especially acceptable among those who might find it hard to take a daily pill, either logistically or who experience internalized or external stigma. And common patient concerns that really made it not acceptable were people who had a lot of injection-related pain or who didn't want to come into the clinic as often. But overall, providers were really enthusiastic, had many patients switching over, and the main concerns were about their capacity to really implement a robust, successful program and the potential of patients developing drug resistance if they were lost to follow-up and wanting to make sure they had the capacity and staff to prevent that. And in addition, they cited the need for more training to just make sure everyone in their clinic felt comfortable talking about LAI and options. And, you know, the interviews were so incredible. I got to conduct almost all of them. And so we have a few quotes that just really highlight this theme. So the first is, you know, I think a lot of patients are really receptive to the idea, especially if they've been on long-acting injectables for psychiatric needs in the past. Because the amount of transientness that happens with homelessness and unstable housing and trying to keep track of daily meds is nearly impossible for a lot of people. Another provider said it's a once a month thing. They're like, great, I can be a person for the rest of the month and not have to think about my HIV every day. And then having this tool to support people in course correcting and getting healthier has been incredibly gratifying and incredibly exciting, both for us and also for the people who have had a really hard time controlling their HIV with oral methods. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. But that's what we sort of took away as the broad theme around how acceptable this was to both providers and patients. And then with respect to equity, many interviewed programs emphasize their approach to LAI as having an equity lens. That was like a very core part of how and why they were doing this work. So as a result, the LAI clinics in San Francisco were reaching populations who face barriers to oral alternatives, such as people experiencing homelessness, people who use drugs, Black and Latino MSM, and trans women, among others. And it was interesting, people also really mentioned that the equity wins went beyond just HIV prevention and treatment, but patients were engaging in LAI often gained more trust in the system and became more engaged in their healthcare overall, especially those who had never had viral suppression before and were able to do so through LAI. And so here's a quote illustrating that. There's a not small proportion of patients that have never been on daily oral ART, have never had an undetectable viral load, and basically almost immediately on long acting, they achieve that. And then they feel a lot better. And I think it's actually that feeling a lot better that gives people, especially for patients that come in with really low CD4 counts, they're like, wow, maybe there is a point to medicine. I feel like they've had this experience of panic coming into the clinic and leaving and not feeling better because they're never able to take their meds regularly for so long that it's really hard to understand what's the value of going to the doctor. And so people really see this as a way to address equity concerns and support people in HIV prevention and treatment and also their health more broadly. But people said, you know, with respect to resource intensiveness, sites overwhelmingly discussed that LAI programs required considerable time and skill for patient navigation support, patient follow-up, and insurance navigation. And so for this reason, providers really emphasized the need to start slow when launching a program and making sure when somewhere was implementing a new program that it was really within the capacity of their clinic to be able to sustain that work. And again, I've got a couple quotes. So we initiate with people who sometimes kind of fall off the radar, and that can be potentially unsafe, as I mentioned earlier, with some of the resistance that can develop. So they really don't want people to fall off with long-acting injectable. So we do a lot to find people who are off our radar, and that's really hard. It takes a lot of people power and outreach is expensive and time-consuming. But we do it, and I would say that's probably one of the biggest challenges we have. And another person who does navigation said, a lot of my time will be spent working with the private insurances, trying to figure out how to navigate them, or trying to convince pharmacies that I know what I'm doing and direct them on how to get things covered because they're not familiar with it. So a lot of time on the phone, following up, texting patients, and that sort of work in order to make this successful. And the last theme that really came from providers was with respect to scalability and sustainability. So interviewed sites had many innovative ideas for scaling LAI, including ways to scale it equitably. However, nearly every single person I talked to lacked the dedicated resources for LAI. So as a result, some have already capped or plan to cap participation, and all would require additional resources to expand. One person said, I'm like, this is how much staffing I have. So here's what I'm going to do to control demand, really. And I have to say no to people. I mean, anyone I say no to for injectable, I'm like, how about oral prep? Because we can do that today. But it feels like we don't currently have enough staff for expanding beyond what we've been doing. Another person shared, because of our funding limitation, we have a limit of 10 patients, but we know there's a need for more. We're at this point where to expand this model, we really do need more support from the city. So now that that's sort of gone over the key findings, we'll briefly discuss some models. In other words, just like how the sites we interviewed structure their programs. So the big picture message here is that there's no single standardized way to run an LAI program in San Francisco. The structure varies based on what kind of organization it is, what resources are available, what staffing is available, and who the patient population is. And among the sites we talked to, most included a range of staffing types. So I talked about the different people we interviewed, but most programs included nurses, outreach specialists, pharmacists, and clinicians. And those staff roles could be in-house, staffed at the clinic, or through partnership. So for example, many small programs relied on an external pharmacy partner rather than having a pharmacist in their clinic. Many programs were nurse-led with just consulting clinicians as needed. And many programs noted benefiting from the lived experience of their staff members, specifically navigators, to really build trust with community members and do that work to get people to stay engaged in care. And most programs, especially those working with people who experience barriers to accessing healthcare, had a lot of flexibility in how they delivered these services, with allowing people to drop in for their injections, basically. And so because of that, all programs required considerable outreach and navigation support to stay in touch with patients, as well as support navigating insurance. So that's the big picture takeaway, but there's a few examples of program styles that we learned in our interviews. So one site was actually an oncology infusion clinic, and they had not done work around HIV, but they added LAI injections, which require them to train their injection nurses on sexual health and this specific injection, but otherwise they could use their existing site protocols because they already exist as an infusion clinic. Another site that engaged in home healthcare services added LAI, and they actually could bring the injections to people in their homes. Another site, or multiple sites, offered primary care to populations who were highly impacted by HIV and made LAI part of their primary care services, mostly relying on nurses who tend to have more availability to do the daily LAI services than clinicians to really run the program. And another site, which operated within an existing drop-in center, added LAI services in a very, very low barrier way. And again, the take-home point here is there's no one-size-fits-all solution. These programs are being successfully implemented in a wide range of ways that really fit the site and setting and patient population that they're serving. So now I'll share a little bit about the LAI uptake as far as who it is reaching currently in the city of San Francisco. So we were able to get clinical data from 6 of the sites we interviewed. So I emphasized this in the beginning, but just to emphasize it again, that's a subset of the sites offering LAI that's not non-representative. It's not including the largest providers of LAI. 3 offered LAI ART and PrEP, and 3 just offered ART. And there was a total of 68 patients on LAI ART and 71 on PrEP. So a total of 139 patients that we received data about. And these sites disproportionately have patients insured by Medi-Cal, unlike our interview sample, which included more of a mix of private and public insurance. The data we're getting on clients was really the Medi-Cal population. So the map here on the left shows the 6 sites that that offer data, and the gray shading are the zip codes where the majority of their patients lived. And the one on the right is a new diagnosis rates in San Francisco in 2022, with darker blue neighborhoods representing higher new diagnosis rates. So we can see some overlap in these maps. Most of these sites and their LAI patients were located in neighborhoods with relatively high rates of new HIV diagnoses. And so here's what we learned about the patients at those 6 sites. Most were LGBTQ, most were insured by Medi-Cal, most had previously been on some form of oral therapy, and the average age for those with ART were 45 and 37 for PrEP. And then here's just a chart showing race and ethnicity data. So most patients were white for both ART and PrEP. People who are Latino were the next largest group, and then Black African Americans were the 3rd largest. And people of all other races made up a small proportion of those receiving LAI, ART, or PrEP in San Francisco. And while Black African American and Latinx people were highly represented in ART, so there were 25 and 28% of patients respectively, compared to 11 and 22% of people living with HIV. We know this could be for a lot of reasons, but it suggests that the sites are really engaging those communities intentionally from the equity lens that we talked about. And in contrast, people who are Black and African American or Latinx were less represented in LAI PrEP, as you can see there. So 13 and 28% of patients compared to making 15 and 43% of new HIV diagnoses. And here's just about gender identity, again, from just those six sites. As you can see at the top part of the chart, most patients were cis men, with trans women making up the next largest category of patients. And notably, trans women made up 13% of LAI ART patients, despite being 3% of those living with HIV in San Francisco. And similarly, trans women made up 34% of LAI PrEP patients, despite being 6% of new HIV diagnoses. So again, really limited data, but there are many factors at play in shaping how each site engages community and who they serve. But this data suggests that these sites are really having success engaging trans women who are not benefiting at the same level from oral therapies. Quick chart about housing status, again, from the six sites. So while people experiencing homelessness or living in an SRO made up approximately 5% of people living with HIV in San Francisco in 2022, shown on the left side of the chart, people who were unstably housed made up 20% of LAI ART patients. So really, these sites are reaching unhoused folks. And with respect to LAI PrEP, people who experienced homelessness made up 17% of new diagnoses and 14% of LAI PrEP patients. Okay, so what do we make of this small body of LAI PrEP patient data? As we've mentioned many times, we can't actually use this data to generalize more broadly. However, many of the data points suggest that the sites that provided data are reaching priority populations, perhaps due to like their existing relationships with communities, their existing patient panel. And also, it sounds like a lot are really intentionally using an equity lens in how they're distributing LAI. And another quote about sort of how providers are viewing that. What we're trying to do is really focus on the equitable expansion, and particularly in populations who have had lower uptake of PrEP and also have high rates of HIV and no new diagnosis. So that's why there's a lot of interest in trying to get it more available for people experiencing homelessness and people who use drugs who we've been really bad at getting oral PrEP out to. And then amongst the people of color, African American, Latinx populations that also have lower uptake and higher rates of HIV, and then cis and trans women as well. Those are the groups we've been focused on. Okay, so just to close out with some future considerations for how we're going to think about long-acting injectable PrEP and ART based on everything we've discussed today. So providers were really enthusiastic about LAI and its potential to support HIV elimination. However, they acknowledge that long-acting injectables are just one of many tools to ending the HIV epidemic. They're just one piece of the puzzle. We'll need a diverse set of tools, including and beyond LAI, to eliminate HIV. As we've already discussed, LAI, ART, and PrEP are really resource intensive, especially when trying to engage populations who experience the most barriers to access. In the current state where implementation sites lack dedicated, sustainable resources, expansion is really limited. However, when implemented, LAI alternatives have the potential for large equity gains, especially if sites work to integrate LAI access into settings and services accessed by the priority populations. And we saw examples of this early in the presentation, such as sites that offer drop-in injections or those that were really linking PrEP assessment or offering LAI PrEP to those within STI services. And there's an opportunity to do more robust evaluation to understand the full range of client data and to understand how partnerships and collaborations could play out and support this work in San Francisco. So that is the end of me talking at you all, but I would love to hear if anybody has any thoughts or questions or discussion.
Thank you so much, Savannah. I appreciate that. Does anybody have any questions for Savannah?
Hi, Savannah. I have a quick question. Thank you for the presentation. For the people who participated in the LAI ART, were they reporting high treatment adherence prior to getting the injectables? I'm curious about the population.
It's a good question. I would say, this will be fully kind of explored in the report, but it varied. So I think some people were kind of following FDA guidelines to really take people who were already adhering on oral meds and offer them injectable. And then some clinics were really doing the opposite and were saying, with an equity stance, we really actually want this as a tool for people who oral meds have not been working for and who lose their meds, who experience a lot of stigma, live with their parents, can't have oral meds around, who really have a variety of reasons for why oral therapies haven't worked for them, or who are already on an injectable hormones or psychiatric meds and say, you can just get all your injections rather than take some pills, come in for some injections. So it varied, but there were definitely sort of representation from both groups of patients.
Great, thank you. I'd be really interested in hearing about the clinics that just offered it to participants that had people who were not taking their medications before, because our clinic does offer, in Marin County, they do offer the long injecting drugs for ART, but then they found that for folks that were not adhering to their medications, they weren't coming in for their appointments for the injectables. And then there's an issue, right, where if they don't go within that week of needing to get that their appointment, then they have to restart or something. So I think there were some concerns around that. So it'd be interesting to hear what they did with some of those barriers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was, and providers had different perspectives on, but I think all providers were aware of that, wanting to mitigate that risk, and especially around, impacting their ability to take meds or developing resistance. And that, I think, is why that piece around sort of outreach, navigation, relationship building came up so much in trying to serve that patient population of the people who were like, oh, I text them and, we have all these strategies for if someone's not showing up, what we do, how we find them, making sure they have oral backup meds and things like that. So yeah, I'll definitely can share more information about that specifically. Do you want to share something, Thomas?
I do. The question's making me kind of think with regards to just with the presentation to the council. I think we almost need a little bit of background on long-acting injectables. And specifically what I'm thinking of, one is just the insurance issue with regards to the fact that people who are lower income and have Medi-Cal or Medicaid, if I'm getting that right, have access, but people who have Kaiser are struggling to get access because of their approval process. So, and that is kind of we just often don't see that right in our world, where it's the more advanced or new tech is usually denied of people who are lower income, and that's backwards at the moment. So I think people having that understanding is helpful context. And then,
and just to piggyback on that, I just make sure that we break that out too in terms of treatment versus prevention. Because it's my understanding that prevention and private insurance is really where it gets kind of more challenging, but prevention, both prevention and treatment for LAI, it's pretty easy to get it through Medi-Cal or even through Medicare, unless you're with a Medicare Advantage plan or something else that might have some additional complexities to it. And I think that private insurance, I'm guessing for both treatment and prevention, there are more complexities in terms of prior authorizations. And so, but I think that nuance is important between the two.
Great. I made a note to add some of that. Yeah. And I think it definitely, I think private insurance that were non-Kaiser were the people who had the most issue. Because San Francisco Kaiser does have a robust LAI program. And so there might be different criteria to get into it, but the people who are privately insured, not through Kaiser, had the most challenges navigating insurance in San Francisco.
And Thomas, you had another point. I'm sorry, I jumped in.
No, I was kind of hoping you were jumping in, because I was kind of just repeating words that I've heard you say in the past. So That's why I was stumbling on purpose. And it's also just making me think, Andy, I don't know if you'd be interested in during the full council meeting is to actually maybe introduce this section and kind of say why this came about and what your kind of intent with it and maybe a little bit of background on the current state if you've got that bandwidth. I think that'd be really helpful to kind of show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And then there was another piece of we just got data yesterday on our NHBS study, so National Behavioral. I'm not sure what NHBS stands for. Basically, it's every 3 years. Thank you. Every 3 years, they go out and they interview the highest risk populations for HIV. So there's a cycle for men who have sex with men, people who use or inject drugs, and then high risk heterosexuals is what they are called. So they just finished the men who have sex with men cycle, and they asked a lot of questions around injectable PrEP, and I was really surprised with how many people were actually interested in it. So I just want to put that out there to the full council. Maybe if we have those slides for that introduction, Andy, that might be helpful as well. But I really didn't think people would lean into a shot monthly or every other month. They really wanted a 6-month shot, which I thought was interesting. But then one of the clinicians, like, that means you have to put a lot of medication into somebody and that would hurt like hell. So she's like, I don't think they really thought that one through. And there is no such product that lasts for 6 months. So just to be clear on that, but it was, I just wanted to share that with folks that I think people will lean into this faster than I actually thought they would, for at least from a PrEP perspective. Cool. Great. That was a great presentation, by the way. I really could not be more satisfied with regards to the product and what came about with regards to this happening.
Yeah. Very, so does helpful. Anybody else have any other suggestions or any other thoughts before we move on for Savannah?
So I'll provide about, I think, 45 minutes or so for this presentation. That should hopefully include Q&A. I think go on shortly after our pro forma agenda items. We're starting a little bit later. I'm sure I told folks that the meeting starts at 4 o'clock, but because of a scheduling snafu with another thing that's happening, we'll start at 4:15. And so there's usually about 20 minutes to half an hour of just updates and things like that. And then you'll go on right after. I think that's how we'll do that. We'll have lunch or dinner a little bit later than usual. Does that work for you, Savannah?
Yeah, that sounds great. And Andy, if it works, I'll touch base with you about maybe how to do that intro or sort of work together on the front introduction piece, you and Thomas. And yeah, that sounds great, Mark.
Sure thing. And so this is in person, is that correct?
Correct. All full council meetings are currently in person.
At 25
Venice, sixth floor auditorium. I think it's 610.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the only other thing that I'm going to want to add in is just a comment that getting to zero is also doing some work around uptake of not only LAI for treatment and prevention, but also DoxyPep. And just DoxyPep as well. So they're looking at some of the sites that we did not get data from, but it looking at it in a little bit of a different way. So there's going to be information coming from them eventually. It will not be looking as closely at the kind of client level, population level data, but they are looking at those as well. So there will be something coming from them eventually.
Great. Okay. Thank you again so much, Savannah.
Thank you. Great. Thank you all. Okay.
Moving right along. Mark,
have a lovely afternoon.
I also just want to acknowledge Andy's kind of role in this. Andy really pushed the stone uphill from the beginning. So thank you.
Thanks, Andy.
My pleasure.
Mark?
Take care, y'all.
Bye.
All right. So I will share screen for us to go into our annual
council work plan presentation calendar.
Exactly. One moment. All right, can you all see that?
Yes.
All right, so you'll see that I've already populated the calendar/work plan with things that are already either been predetermined for January and February, and for things that happen on an annual basis. So we'll just quickly go through what we have there and point out where we have spaces open. You can look towards that that box in the second column called Future Topics as sort of an idea bank for these open spots. So in January, as we saw, we're going to be having a long-acting injectables presentation. We're also going to be having a report on this mental health landscape needs assessment that Robert Worry, our grant writer for the Ryan White Award, has put together. So that will take us through this month. In February, we'll have a presentation from, I actually forget who it's from, but on the Medi-Cal expansion. And then we'll have our usually annual, we didn't have it last year, but our usually annual Megatrends presentation, which should be provided from someone from CHEP and someone from HHS to really look at sort of the national landscape and how that will impact us locally. So those 2 months are pretty much done because we do like to, as much as possible, stick to 2 presentations so that we can give a healthy amount of time per presentation. In March, even though it looks like we have 3 things here, we actually do have an opening. So we'll have Kira's needs assessment report. She's finishing that up now. She did a great job as far as recruitment goes. We have over 50 folks who are part of this needs assessment. We'll also vote on this year's needs assessment. And then we have in parentheses a grantee assessment. You know, that could be a presentation or that could be something that's just simply uploaded to the website and distributed to the council via email. The grantee assessment is currently in process. And so there is a space there in March that can certainly knock grantee assessment out. In April, we do have our annual HCAP annual report, usually from Stephen Spano, and we have an opening for 1 more presentation. In May, we usually have a presentation on the advocacy efforts coming from HAPN, which is the HIV AIDS Provider Network, and we have 1 spot open. You'll see there at the bottom in italics is something that we had last year, which is a presentation on long-term survivors and HIV and aging. That's just there as a suggestion, potentially, similar to the future topics box. In June, we have our annual CQI/quality assurance presentation, which looks at how San Francisco is doing compared to sort of national, not sort of, to definite national indicators that John Ainsley usually provides. You'll see at the bottom there that we also had an End the Epidemics update. Again, simply a suggestion. Not even a suggestion, just something that you can consider. In July, we have nothing scheduled, so we have 2 presentations we can put in there. And then last July, we had a presentation on PrEP, in particular around disparities and new tech. In August, we have our annual ARIES report, as well as our annual carry forward allocation vote. Sometimes that comes earlier, depending on the need. And then we have our annual presentation on service, on Ryan White services. These are usually provided by a combination of John Ainsley, Maria Lacayo, Flora Ramon, Beth Neary. In September is our annual prioritization and allocation. So that's clearly a very full agenda. You'll see here our usual things, quick review of the HRSA mandate, a vote on the eligibility criteria and the definitions of severe need and special populations, our EPI report, and then, of course, votes on resource allocation and service category prioritization. I have in here parentheses the 2024 needs assessment report. So usually we like to, in the past, we have had this take place in August or September. You know, we because of the pandemic and because of the challenges the pandemic posed to collecting needs assessment data, we've pushed this off, but I'd like us to try to get back on track in having this occur around the time of resource allocation and prioritization. It is supposed to inform your decision-making along with the quantitative needs assessments provided by folks doing ARIES and EPI. In October, we traditionally have our reports and votes on our county partners, San Mateo and Marin. And we see down there below, last October, we also had an integrated plan update as well as a presentation on cluster detection. And then in November, we have a totally open slate. I see here I'm getting to zero twice. I don't think we actually had a getting to zero this past November. It was a potential. We've had the last getting to zero presentation in 2022. So it's been a minute. And then we have a suggestion of HIV incarceration that didn't actually, there wasn't room for it on the agenda last year. So this is your work before you, is to populate the rest of these months. There's March, there's one for March potentially, one for April, one for May, one for June, two for July, two for November. Yes, Matt.
So this isn't a totally formulated thought, but with the switch potentially to the HIV Care Connect, I know that we're having another meeting, I think, later in this month, away from Aries. I don't know if there needs to be some. I think it might be helpful if the Planning Council understood what the state's plan is with the connection with EHARS, HIV Care Connect, the LEO database. But then again, I don't know the time frame on this. April, now they're saying, which scares the hell out of me because I think that feels a little aggressive. Maria, I don't know if you have more information. So that could just impact like the Aries report. And I feel like it is something that would be good for the Planning Council to hear. What is the state's plan for all this data collection being somewhat integrated?
So do you think the best presenter on this would be a state rep?
It should be, because they're the only ones that seem to know anything. I'm scared to death about this. I'm really frightened. Maria, I don't know where you are with this.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know any more than you do. So, you know, we've tried to get more information. But yeah, I do agree with Matt. That's a good, you know, maybe we can have someone from the state come and present to the council about that, because they are, and I think it's all supposed to connect with ADAP as well.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that's all.
Yeah, I know. So that's where it's like,
I don't think I know San
Francisco doesn't use EHARS, but you guys are having to connect. So this, I mean, it just is. There's a whole lot going on. They're saying supposedly that, I mean, it was supposed to be rolled out by the end of 2023, and then they said April of 2024, and it was Chris Powler just sent an email. Is it yesterday, I think, with a new date, Maria, of the next meeting?
Right, when they give us the little updates of information.
Little, I think, being the operative word.
I think that's a great topic. And Chris Kent, could he actually help us with that?
He would be the first person that I reach out to. And if he is not provided, then I would ask him. I think it's probably more likely that he would say pass, and I will pass you on to a person who actually can speak at length to it. But he would definitely be my first point of contact.
Yeah, great.
Okay. All right, we have something for April. I don't know how long that presentation is. The presentations from the State Office of AIDS tend to be rather brief. So there might be room for more in April, but we could just keep that in there for now and see what we see.
Yeah, and I just want to jump in, Mark, and I'll just make this motion. So if everyone's okay with the italicized topics, we can just move those to unitalics and right into their months, because that is really helpful, because then we can really see. I think it will only be July and November. Well, July, that will really be completely empty. I don't
these
know.
These are all important topics. Yeah. Great suggestion. Thank you.
Yeah. I don't know about the integrated plan update cluster detection, since we just had that this past fall.
I think
that's on. But I agree with you, Mark, that getting to zero update would be really helpful.
Why don't we put that in a little bit earlier, since we've missed a whole year? Maybe we could put that in July?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll reach out to Courtney about that. All right, let me take out that. Let me take out cluster detection. So October is basically finished, but maybe I wonder if there is, you know, the integrated plan, of course, is something that we have already voted on. We've seen a lot of, but I think it still would be good to have, in some ways, like an annual update. So why don't I put that in November?
Okay. And then I was just going to mention, like, my vote. I'm always happy to talk about HIV housing or HIV in the marginally housed. I also really am interested in HIV and incarceration. Dr. Asa Clemenzi, I think it's listed twice in the calendar. But
so why don't we put that there for November? We had tried before, but there was no room. Let's try that again. It's a very important population. There's certainly a center of excellence devoted to it. And then let's put housing in July to pair that off with getting to zero. And then you and I will talk more, obviously, when it gets closer to July about what that will look like, who I need to reach out to, if that will be you, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure. I will say September looks really packed, and I get that that's the summit that's marked, but that does seem like a lot.
Sure does. You know,
do we need to break that out?
That might mean that I'm not sure how we would. What I could do is move some of the smaller things to other places. So say the eligibility criteria, that doesn't have to happen in September. Yeah. Like, we can literally do that basically as soon as the federal government puts out its federal poverty levels, which I think is always done like by the second of the year. So that could actually take place anywhere. I could put that in March, for example.
They're all pretty quick, though, except the EPI report, right?
Yeah, EPI report is the lengthiest, and so is
resource allocation.
That actually tends to be fairly quick because we do have the traveling motions through our committees.
Yeah.
The longer discussion is often around service category prioritization, because I like to have folks go into small groups to really make it a robust kind of considered discussion. But the needs assessment report could potentially be not as long as EPI by any means. Could be sort of in some ways like the second of the presentations, with, as Matt's saying, most of these being fairly swift. We do increase the amount of time potentially to 7 o'clock, so to make that a 3-hour meeting with a longer break. We didn't actually need to do it last year, but then we didn't have a needs assessment report last year. So I think we do have that. I mean, it used to be an all-day thing. I'm sure Matt recalls that. And before the all-day thing, it used to be a two-day thing.
Two-day, I was going to say. It was more than an all-day.
We used to have an all-day thing for many years at the women's building, if you recall. And then prior to that, we had this 2-day.
We had it at the gay men's, the chorus building, which I forget.
Yeah, exactly. That was a 2-day
thing. We had it at the Zen Center. We've had it all over the place.
You know, we actually are small.
Sometimes. Zen Center.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, if we can break things up for the months that are a little lighter, then yeah. Because, I mean, speaking from personal experience, yeah, long days, long meetings after a full day is a lot.
So why don't I go ahead then and put that, per your suggestion, Manuel, put at least like this 10-minute one eligibility criteria up earlier.
Okay.
In March.
Good. Yeah. Thomas, your hand's raised?
Yeah, no, this looks good. I was wondering about Hep C. So I see there's a Hep C micro elimination, but I'd just love to hear maybe end Hep C, invite them at some point.
Let's see where we could potentially put them. I mean, they could potentially go in April, depending on how long the state office feels it would need for its Care Connect update. That might be the only place for it. So I'll put that in parentheses.
Great. And then the overdose stuff as well. So maybe, I mean, we just put that future topic area maybe. But
overdose prevention? Yeah, absolutely.
Does October really take... I don't remember
Marin
always taking a full council in October.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Marin certainly doesn't.
I was thinking we could add something there.
I don't know how to take that, Mark. It'll be my final one, so you won't have to hear me.
I think your presentations are often quite, they're robust, is a word.
Yeah.
Are you retiring? Is that what you're alluding to there, Matt?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, congratulations.
It's still a year away, but this will be my final year.
Got it.
I'm hitting my final year.
So let's put overdose prevention in there, potentially. We'll see.
Great.
All right. Then I think we're actually good to go. We're done. So if I can get a motion to approve this.
I motion to approve it.
All right. Is there a second?
I second it.
Any opposed to approving the council work plan for 2024 as written? Mm-hmm. Seeing none, it is so approved. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Mark. Well, great. So then that brings us down to pretty much our last item, which is next meeting date and agenda items. So the next Council Affairs Committee is scheduled for February 14th from 3 to 4:30 p.m. Are there any suggestions for agenda items?
I think we'll have at least one presentation review. I'm not sure. I mean, that will certainly be dependent on Thomas and Bill to see if they have their presentations available or if they would prefer just to sort of talk through it. They've done that in the past where they've just come with ideas and bullet points and the committee itself has said, okay, talk more about this. You don't need to talk about that. So Bill and Thomas can just certainly show up with whatever they have, whether it's ideas or a presentation or just a list of potential things. And then there's the Medi-Cal expansion. I don't know if you recall Irma or Thomas from our co-chairs meeting who had planned on talking about that. Was that Andy? I forget. I'll have to connect
Andy,
with...
Andy would be capable. I know that.
Yeah. So I'll connect with Bill and Andy. That
Andy will be... Yeah, I think Andy's name was actually brought up, and he is definitely a good person to do it.
Okay, so I assume then we'll have one presentation to review and probably just more of an open discussion about what a Megatrends presentation will look like. Does that sound good for the agenda next month?
It's the 13th, not the 14th.
Okay. Oh, is that there? Okay.
I was just reading the agenda, sorry.
That's probably my bad, sorry.
Okay. Anybody else have anything they wanted to mention before we adjourn? No. Okay. Well, thanks everyone for your time.
Actually, I have one thing. I want to thank you, Manuel, for continuing on. You've done a sterling job of facilitating, and you're such a, in some ways, like you're no longer new, but you jumped in when you were new. So I just really appreciate the leadership you've provided. And also, I want to thank Na for stepping up. I know that this wasn't quite in the job description it was shared with you.
Great. Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate everyone. Have a good rest of your evening.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you.